And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It is a nerd edition. I was listening to a podcast with this guest earlier, and somebody said, we're going to indulge our inner nerds. I'm like, no. You are nerds. We're all nerds. That's why we're here talking about college football on podcasts. So, Bill Connolly from ESPN, welcome. You're just home. We're not indulging our nerdy side. We are proud, unapologetic nerds, and here we are.
Right. I came at my nerddom in a slightly different way, but we're all kindred spirits here.
Exactly. And for those who are not hip to it, and you need to be, Bill is one of the godfathers of the analytics movement in college football. Used to write for Football Outsiders, was at SB Nation, now is at ESPN, created the SP Plus ranking, which is a predictive ranking. It's not the one we're all yelling about this week, by the way. That's ESPN's other predictive ranking, the FPI, which is not Bill's baby. So, but we will have questions about that as well. But now I wanted to talk to you because I had a story coming out that was analytically based and wanted to talk to you a little bit about that one. And then you had a story on receivers in the draft that echoes something that I've been screaming about for the last few weeks. And I'm so glad to talk to you about it. But the story I wrote for The Athletic this week was about throwing or running on the first play of the drive. And it came out Thursday. So Bill, you've had a chance to see it, but it was really interesting to me seeing how much more likely you are to score if you just throw on the first play. The numbers it's basically if you complete a pass of 5 yards or more, you have about a 37.9% chance of scoring on that drive. And the other flip side of it, which is just crazy to me, is if you throw an incomplete pass, you basically have the same chance of scoring a touchdown on that drive as if you ran for 5 yards or less. So if you had a 5 yard rushing gain, which is a good play, it's pretty negligible compared to an incomplete pass, which was wild to me. But I mean, you see this stuff all the time where you notice a statistical trend. Does your head explode sometimes when you're like, how come nobody just does this?
Yeah, I mean, it's two things with your piece today that made perfect sense. I mean, number one, I do think, you know, when you just think about play calling in general, there's just this sense of, you know, team trots out to start their possession. They're going to run the ball up the middle and then we'll figure out where
to establish the run. That's what we do. That's who we are.
Exactly. And I don't even know if guys think about it. It's just like, it's not even like a conscious decision. It's just what you do. And that's the biggest, that's where analytics tend to have the most, the earliest impact is just figuring out like, wait, why do you do that? And then once you get to the because it's what we do answer, then you go like, well, maybe that's stupid then. Maybe we should step back and figure out what is actually the best thing to do in these situations. So that made sense in that regard. And I mean, the other thing that makes sense is, you know, the success rate formula that I've been using I would have never guessed that I would have used it this much when I started tinkering with it back in like 2007. But you know, the most predictive measure in college football is this easy success rate measure where it's how frequently are you gaining 50% of your yards on first down, 70% on second, 100% on third or fourth. Very easy, like on base percentage, very, very easy. It's like a gateway drug for a lot of other stats, I think, for a lot of people. But bottom line is you're, you know, whatever the current averages are, you average X number of yards per pass and X number of yards per run. Pass number is way higher. You're way more likely to gain 5+ yards on first down. Like not even the first play of the drive, just the first play of any series of downs. Right. You're more likely to get that yardage passing.
Well, and that's the thing, like a bad passing offense averages 6.5 yards per attempt, and that includes incompletions right. and everything. A great rushing offense averages 5 yards an attempt.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, the ball control aspect and all that, like it is more all or nothing. As you found out in that piece talking about Florida State, your Florida State play calling, sometimes you do throw incomplete on first down.
It's like in the back of my mind, like we had an incomplete pass on first down. It was second and 10. Why didn't I just get something? Like, I understand right, where those coaches are coming from.
And that leads to another just pure offensive coordinator instinct, which is, well, crap, we just threw incomplete. We got to get at least 3 yards on second down. Let's run the ball on second down when your best option, again, is throwing twice. Second down, third down, second, whether it's second and 10 or whatever, throw two more times, you're more likely to gain 10 yards.
I feel like if you play blackjack, like basic strategy, you would understand this better. Like, why you should throw, like yep. on second and 10, why you should just throw it again? Because the averages say you're going to get what you're looking for this time, yep. even if you didn't last time.
It's all about odds versus, I mean, blackjack's a good comparison because you, even if you understand the odds, you still kind of have to have the guts for it because, you know, if I'm playing with real, like if I'm playing on my phone, I know all the, like the spots where you're supposed to hit on 15 or 16 or whatever. And I just like, okay, do it. This is that scenario. Do it. When there's real money on the line or a real job on the line, you're like, I don't want to bust. I'll stay.
Well, exactly. Because like, eventually your money goes down to zero and then
right.
it doesn't matter what the odds say, you're out of money. So
yeah,
but that's
no, it's
and the other thing
hard.
The other thing about it that made this story interesting, I called Phil Longo because he's the offensive coordinator at North Carolina, and they had a massive split this past year where on the first, if they threw on the first play of the drive, they gained 10 yards more than what they gained if they ran on the first, but they were both good. It was 16.7 throwing and like 6.4 running. So both of them were good, and both of them were better than those stats were last year, or in 2019. And he quoted Bruce Lee, which I thought was fascinating, because he said what's Bruce Lee's most famous quote? And I didn't know. And he said, "Be water," and then explained to me kind of what that meant.
Yep.
And then I thought about it in the context of an offensive play call, and then I thought about it in the context of an RPO team specifically.
Right.
Like, the reason they have this huge split is probably not because they're afraid to call passes on the first play of a drive. It's that they're calling RPOs where Sam Howell has the choice to hand off or throw. Right. And so when he chooses to throw, which is probably about 40% of the time, it's because somebody's going to be wide open because the defense is stacking the box.
Right. Right. That's always been the thing with RPOs is, I mean, it's the play action pass that you always get to call correctly. You know, right. your timing's always going to be right on them when you throw. I think we've come to understand through the years when we first started talking about RPOs, it was like this revolution. You're always going to have the right call. Like, well, I mean, you still have to be willing to run the ball for it to work. Like that is part of the option is when the pass isn't there, you have to be able to run it. So third and nine isn't a good RPO down. But
let's put ourselves in the quarterback shoes on an RPO, and then we can explain why it doesn't always work. You are watching things happen while you have the ball in the belly of the back.
Right.
You and the back have to have this kind of unspoken communication where you're either going to let him take it or not. He needs to know that. And then also there are large people trying to kill you at the same time.
Another problem that coaches have told me about that I just kind of laughed because I didn't even think about it is sometimes with RPOs, you run into problems too, because quarterback always wants to throw. He might not be actually willing to hand the ball off all the time. He wants to throw the ball. It's like, you know, playing a video game. You want to be throwing the ball and you don't want to settle for handing it off. So you have to have the right mentality to execute RPOs. But clearly what they're doing in North Carolina, I mean, unless they're playing a Notre Dame level defense, what they're doing in North Carolina is pretty optimized at the moment.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can tell how that works along, you know, with the defense, and they're not afraid to throw on the first play of drive because that's what they did against Notre Dame because they had to. There wasn't another choice. They were facing a talent deficit there, and they had to do it. And then they're playing Wake Forest. Wake Forest takes a huge lead. Of course, you've got to do this. So situationally, you got to. And of course, they didn't do it against Virginia Tech or Miami. Well, you're averaging 10 yards a carry against Miami and 9 yards a carry against Virginia right. Tech. Like, you should never throw if you're doing that.
No. No, no, but it is good. It's, I mean, the RPO in general, we always talk about you should run or you should pass. Like, they called a run here. They called a pass. Well, a lot of times they didn't. They just called the play and it became whatever it became.
Yep. Well, it is interesting because you talked to a lot of coaches when you did your book Study Hall. And I'm curious, do you feel like people are more willing or about the same level of willing to question why they do the things they do and then look at the numbers and try to determine whether they can do something better?
Yeah, I think there's two steps to evolution in this regard. One of them is questioning yourself and bringing people in to ask questions of you to kind of challenge you in that regard. When it comes to play calling and tendencies and when you go forward on fourth down, all those things. And then there's actually doing it on Saturdays. And I think for step one, we're absolutely much further down the line here. And, you know, even if it's just, you know, I always reference championship analytics, just the fact that they've got a lot of teams in college that where they hand them a binder every single week, because you still can't have computers in the booth, can't have the iPad with the giant logo on the back, like in the pros. It's still just
baffling
binders.
To me. Like an iPad costs like $200. Every school can afford it. There's no resource gap there in terms of buying four iPads.
No, and you can even if the wireless stinks in the press box, which I'm sure it does in places, it doesn't cost that much more to get the plan with the cell service on your, like, we can figure this out. It's 2021, yes. But you still don't do that. Championship still just hands binders to every team to print or like to, they print out stuff for all Hold the on. Different scenarios for when you
find it.
Yeah. And so you've got that binder among many other binders in your press box. But I think just the people are understanding. We're further down the road when it comes to understanding, like, this is probably the right call. Here's where you should hit on 15 or 16 in these scenarios. And of course, Army's done it. You know, Lane Kiffin, every single broadcast of every single Ole Miss game last year, they're like, he follows the analytics. Like, well, sort of. But he did. He went for it on fourth down.
Well, and the thing about Lane that I find fascinating, and I don't even know how we can quantify this, but they seem to train their players to know this is when we're going for it.
Right.
And so there is no, you don't get that moment where you see the players staring at the sideline, making the first down signal, like, let's go for it. Like, they just go line up and run the play. And half the time, that's what gets them the yards.
Right. Yeah. And Matt Corral knowing, like, on third and seven, I don't have to get 7 yards. If I get four, we're probably going for it.
Right.
Like, just that kind of understanding.
Fourth and three or less, we are going for it.
Right. Right. I don't have to get it all here. I can check down if nothing else is working. Like, just that understanding that to that level, I think the team's instincts have changed a little bit. But I do think there's still a gap between what you know you should do and actually doing it in the 5 seconds you have to make that decision on Saturdays. I think that's, we're still catching up in that regard. That part hasn't caught up yet.
Yeah, it is hard. I mean, just in the very tiny little slice of it I got at Florida State, your instincts say, get something here. Just get something. Like,
yeah.
They don't say, the math tells me to do this. And I do wonder if doing it over and over and over again, does that help you understand that the math might work out in your favor? Or does it just reinforce that I got to get something here?
Right. Well, and so much of it depends. I mean, even, you know, you call 60, 70, 80 plays in a given game, it adds up over time, but every single, like, any drive can end after three play. Well, after one technically, but after three plays in a lot of cases. I mean, I do think, and part of it is just like with championship, especially I talk to those guys every year at AFCA. Well, when AFCA is a thing, I talk to them.
Right.
So much of this comes down to, like, a lot of coaches are all in, but then some coaches are like, okay, whatever, let's get the binder, whatever it is. And the first time they go for it in a situation that's against their instincts, like a fourth and five from the 40 or something, whatever that is, where the book says go and they don't, they'll go for it. If they don't get it, it's going to take, like, the trust is gone immediately. And you're 0-for-1. And so it takes a long time to kind of work back to actually trying it again in one of those against your instinct situations. So it is, I mean, it's, I understand, like, the amount of money, like, the jobs on the line, the amount of money on the line. Like, I get why that fear kind of creeps in. I don't want to, I never, like, make fun. Well, I don't try to make fun of coaches too much for such a thing.
No, but I do yell at my TV when they punt on 4th and 2 in plus territory.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And we have this instinct too on Twitter. Like, anytime they punt in opposing territory at all, we complain. But like 4th and 8, odds aren't great on 4th and 8. And
yeah, you know, it's hard to make 4th and 8.
If you have a punter, right, if you can pin them inside the 10, that's still a nice value. So I try to keep that in mind. But yeah, when you're 4th and 2, 4th and 3, and you punt from the 41 or whatever, come on, dude.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
the
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, I want to talk about the story that you put up on Thursday about the receivers in the draft, because this feeds into something that's been driving me insane. So a few weeks ago, I proposed, using Jimmy Johnson's trade value chart, I didn't just pull this out of my hoo-ha, that the Jaguars should offer the Bengals number 25, number 33, and number 45 in exchange for number 5, which... that works on the Jimmy Johnson chart. I don't know if it works on some of the newer ones, but it's close. And the thinking being that the Bengals, if you're not committed to taking Penei Sewell there or Kyle Pitts there, get out of it, because you can get a receiver pretty much anywhere. And the Bengals fans were like, no, man, we're drafting Ja'Marr Chase. He and Joe played together. And then you saw the meme of... Joe Burrow trying to throw to Ja'Marr Chase while getting sacked, and then Joe Burrow with Penei Sewell blocking someone and throwing to just about anyway. So the story you wrote is about how many good receivers are flooding into the NFL and the reasons why. You know, NFL teams are throwing more. College teams have thrown more. I mean, I'll go even further. I would say this goes back about 20 years into high school. When high school offenses became more pass dominant, when 7-on-7 became a thing that kids did every summer, think of the number of reps Devontae Smith, Ja'Marr Chase, De'Ami Brown, all these receivers that are going to be in the draft this year. Think of the number of reps they have had with quarterbacks against DBs, and then think about how many balls they've just caught in games, whether that was in high school or in college.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and it was funny when I was sketching this out. Like, it felt like the most obvious thing in the world. Like, why are more receivers going higher in the draft? Well, teams are throwing more, and college teams are throwing more. And, like, I mean, it's very obvious when you think about it, but it has been a very steady shift. One thing I absolutely wanted to mention in that piece is also, it's not just about how much you're throwing. It's like, now some of the star recruits that would have been running backs 20 years ago are receivers. So even from, like, you know, just in terms of where the blue chip talent is playing on the field, there's more quote unquote blue chip talent out at the receiver position. Now, guys, like, it was funny. I went just purely on height weight. I didn't want to go too far down the, like, you know, who, what skill sets and whatnot. But if you look at just pure height and weight, guys like Julian Fleming and Garrett Wilson could have been, like, might have been running backs 20 years ago. Meanwhile, guys like Joe McKnight and DeMarco Murray, if they were 2021 prospects, would have quite possibly been wide receivers. Joe McKnight would have been an unbelievable receiver in today's game.
My thing is, like, you shouldn't take a running back in the first round unless you think he'd make your team as a slot receiver.
Yeah. And I, one of my favorite guys from 2019 was Kenny Gainwell. He's not big. Oh, yeah. He's not the single fastest guy. He's going to go in the mid round. He's not a first round prospect by any means, but the way Memphis used him was like a glimpse into the future, just in terms of having a guy who can line up in the backfield and actually run the ball in a straightforward run game kind of way, but who can motion out into the slot and catch a quick pass or run a real route downfield, like not probably not the most of, he's not Jamar Chase from a route running standpoint, but he can, when you, if he's on a linebacker, he can absolutely beat that linebacker. And so the versatility of skill sets in that regard, I think, is becoming more important, both in that way and just being able to catch the ball and run upfield. The Christian McCaffreys of the world, who have proven to do a really good job of that, are now the best running backs in the league. So,
well, and the versatility matters too. This is you included a chart that I thought was great, where you had percentage of snaps on the outside and percentage of snaps in the slot for receivers that are coming right into the draft. And like, it's very telling when you look at the top three, Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, especially Jamar Chase and Devontae Smith. They're almost 50-50 outside and slot. I mean, that is, and because my thing, and it's the same in college as in the NFL, if you can change personnel groups without changing people,
right,
without taking anybody right off the field and giving it away, because you can move them around, you can motion everybody around, and this is offense or defense, you can really mess with your opponent's head.
Yes. That's one of my favorite quotes that I've ever gotten from a coach, was kept talking to Kevin Wilson last year about I did a big thing about how the spreads evolution now, how it is the pro style offense and all that. And he basically talked about that 2008 Oklahoma offense, where he was just like, yeah, we can go to big to small without transfer, without substituting. Mm-hmm. Like, we can be bunch, we can line up Jermaine Grisham out wide, we can line him up in the backfield. Like, that becomes just a nightmare for defenses.
Well, that's why when you have a good versatile tight end, like, can he play fullback?
Yeah.
Because if he can, you've just added another dimension to your offense.
Yeah.
I was interested.
And I think that's
the new coordinator in Illinois, the new offensive coordinator in Illinois, who was at Appalachian State last year.
Yeah.
He'll play with what looks like fullbacks, but they're tight ends. And my thinking is, like, if you can recruit three good tight ends, there's some crazy stuff you can do.
Yeah, and we'll see what they can recruit at Illinois. That generally seems to be their problem. But being able to – really, you don't even need a five-star tight end to be able to do those things. He just has to be good at a few different things. He doesn't have to be elite at a few different things to really get value out of him. So that will be kind of interesting to see. They do have kind of a weird set of personnel this year. So we'll see. He might be able to figure out some things to play with.
Yeah. Well, but and going back to the draft and the receivers, you know, where was the best rookie receiver drafted last year? At number 22. It wasn't the first guy off the board. It was I think Justin Jefferson was the third or fourth receiver off the board. So, you know, that's my point, is if there are going to be a bunch of really good receivers in the draft, probably for the next 4 or 5 years, until everything else catches up and everything else normalizes. There's not going to be another Penei Sewell, probably. There's probably not going to be another Kyle Pitts for a little while. So take the guy you can't necessarily get either lower in the first round or next year.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm willing to listen to arguments that either Chase or Smith are just otherworldly. Like, they are top 10 level, special kind of, you can't get these guys every year. I'm willing to listen to those arguments for sure. But I mean, you do scroll further down. If you're talking about trying to get Pitts in the first round and then just a receiver in like the third, you're still going to have the Amari Rodgerses, maybe De'Ami Brown. Although, like, if you watch De'Ami Brown, I don't know why he would fall out of the first round, but
hip to De'Ami Brown now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I would hope so. But then, like, the Rondale Moore and Tutu Atwells, who can immediately make a difference in the slot, but can line up wide as well. Like, those guys are going to be available in the second or third round potentially.
I might line up Rondale Moore at running back as well.
He's
that part of the package.
It hit me over time. Like, you know, I live in Columbia, Missouri still. I go to Missouri games. I didn't last year, obviously, but like they played Arkansas State a while back when Arkansas State had JD McKissick. And like, you know, that dude, he weighed like 180 pounds. It was all in his abs. Like he had just, it was all core. You couldn't actually tackle him. He'd just bounce off of you. But they line him up in the slot. They line him up wide. They handed him the ball out of the backfield and he was good at all of it. And I think
Percy Harvin at Florida, same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. But Rondale, I think, is a very good example of that kind of guy.
Yeah. Now, I'm excited to see. I'm always excited to see how creative coaches use their talent because I kind of wonder, like, would Urban Meyer want to get Kadarius Toney? Like, because they've got the first pick of the second round. They got number 45.
Yep.
I would think Tony's probably around there. Is that some – because he's got some Percy-like qualities, you know? Would he want to – would Meyer want to try to do that? Because he's had a guy like that before.
And he had of those distributions that I posted, he had by far the most interesting, like 2/3 of his catches are out of the slot, but then like 16% are lined up in line, like I mean, obviously he's not a blocking back, but kind of in that position, which I mean, in the NFL, they do, if you're against man, they will run those bunch formations where he could just be terrifying out of that. He lined up wide. He lined up in the backfield. He'd be really interesting too.
Yeah. The trick with him is they had to kind of force feed him touches really until his senior year. And so can he operate within the flow of an NFL offense, which is going to be more complex than what they ran at Florida. So that's the tricky part with him. But again, creative coaches will figure it out.
Yes.
they will find a way to use somebody.
And I do feel better about the level of creativity. I mean, I don't want to overstate this exactly, but it did feel like for years and years with the spread talent coming out of college, you know, offensive coordinators at the pro level were trying to force the square peg into the round hole. And, you know, especially at the quarterback position when they were always, you know, college isn't producing any guys who are ready now. Like, well, they can throw passes. They can read, like, move their direction. Don't just make them do everything that you've done for 20 years. And I do feel like in 2021, we are much further down that road where offensive coordinators are realizing, like, we can do a lot of things with guys with skill A, B, and C. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that I've been doing for the last 20 years at different teams.
That's exactly right. And I remember talking to Dabo Swinney about this 7 or 8 years ago, and he was explaining how early in his time as a head coach, it dawned on him, hey, I'm going to get fired if I don't get this going. And so I can complain all I want about quarterbacks coming out of high school not being able to take a snap from under center, or I can just meet them where they are. And that's what he did, and it has worked out quite well for him.
Okay, quite well. If Nick Saban can do it, then we can all do it. Like, we can all – if he can accept that maybe you win games with offense now, and then he goes out and builds the most perfect offense we've ever seen,
maybe everybody else
can do it too.
Here's the greatest trick Nick Saban played on the world. He complains about that publicly, while privately he's already hard at work building the thing that – like. When he was complaining about the up-tempo stuff, he was already changing the type of personnel he was recruiting. So he's got you watching his right hand, but his left hand is already building, you know, 3 years ahead of you.
That was our joke for a long time, was that quote where he's like, is this what we want college football to be? He was just asking for verification. Like, oh, no, seriously, is this? Because that's what I'll do if that's what we want
to be. That wasn't a complaint. That was a threat.
Right. So. And then we see what happens when we said yes, he said okay, and then he destroyed everybody with that.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
So the big news this week was ESPN's FBI came out, and it's a football power index. It's a predictive index, and basically it's saying, you know, we think this team will be favored in this many games, and there's a lot of ingredients that go into the stew. But the takeaway, the thing that everybody was shocked by, is Iowa State at number 4 and Mississippi State at number 8. I'm not going to get you to defend FPI or trash FPI. I know that you enjoy staying employed. But can you explain to the folks how the Iowa State thing, I understand, and we'll get into it when we talk SP Plus, because they are ranked high in SP Plus, and there's a very good reason for it. The Mississippi State one is the one that's a little shocking to me.
Yeah, and it would make sense above anything else. It would make sense if this was the year where every single projection system that comes out has completely different rankings than a normal year. Because FPI also kind of hates the Pac-12, and my numbers like the Pac-12 more than it has in a very long time. It just because the factors are so weird, because so many teams return so much of last year's talent more than ever before, like the returning production figures that I come up with without getting into like all the weights and everything. Like in a normal year, teams will return like on average about 63% of last year's production. And that's again, like quarterback passing yards. Well,
you're,
is weighted
and you're doing
heavy,
offensive
heavier
line snap counts. You're doing right. A lot. It's more based on than you think.
Right. It's based on all the things that I can put together for, you know, just what impacts next year's change. And so, normal year, that's like 63%. I've just about got all G5 rosters updated now. And currently the national average is 75%. Like normally 75% would get you into like the top 30 of returning production. And now it's the average this year. So
except shockingly,
when everybody
BYU
returns, everybody,
every, nobody's returning
except
to BYU.
BYU and Northwestern. BYU and Northwestern. I did love that, you know, Nicole got Kalani Sitake to basically say like, yeah, we were too good last year. Everybody had a great senior year. They didn't have a reason to come back.
Well, but also, I mean, let's be honest. They're like 24. They're married. They got two kids. I mean, it isn't a senior at BYU. I'm not really making light of this. A senior at BYU is in a different place in his life.
Yeah.
Probably than a senior at a lot of other places because of the 2-year mission. So, I mean, that probably has something to do with it.
But I mean, I think you absolutely have a point. But just aside from those two teams, and I guess Northwestern isn't nearly as bad as BYU in that regard. But so many outside of Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, like everybody returns last year's starting quarterback, it seems. And the Pac-12, especially since they were the anti-BYU and they got no senior seasons, everyone's coming back for the Pac-12. And so my numbers react to that differently. FPI reacts to that differently. And everybody has pretty different projections. That makes perfect sense in this dumb year that we've lived through.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, Iowa State, I mean, they have Iowa State higher than my SP Plus does, but barely. Like, I have them 7th, like a point behind number 5 right now.
With a fourth-year starting quarterback, because you weight the quarter, the returning quarterback more. And
right.
Iowa State not only has a returning good quarterback in Brock Purdy, but he's a fourth-year starter.
Yep. And they have, I mean, they've pieced together two of the most unique things that you can. And that's, you know, number one, a Heisman level quarterback or something close to it. I mean, he's not going to be a favorite, right, but he's going to be on the list, who wasn't a five-star blue chipper. And then they have one of the best skill core guys in the country who wasn't the blue chipper. And so Like those are kind of two requirements in terms of like the upside you need to play at a top 10 level. Those are two requirements and they have them and we know they have them. It's not even a surprise that we're not even suggesting that those guys could be that good. They already are. We already know that. So I have them seventh. Like it makes sense that they're in the top 10. Now, we're going to learn something this year about upside just in terms of like team-wide upside and does this having this extra, this massive amount of experience, does it create more upside or have they already hit their ceiling and there's no way they can advance beyond it?
Yeah, this feels like an NCAA basketball tournament where there's a bunch of mid-majors that right. start five seniors who have played together for 4 years.
Right. Right. Louisiana brings back just about everybody. They lost a couple of good running backs, but they have more good running backs that bring back everybody else. Yeah. There are going to be a lot of those teams. And it's kind of a shame we don't have a lot more. Like there are like Louisiana, Texas in week one. We've got some really fun non-conference matchups among these teams. But it does kind of stink that like some of the mid-majors that could be awesome aren't necessarily going to get all that many opportunities to prove it outside of, you know, games against each other.
Well,
so.
let me give you one of those though, because there is a mid-major and perhaps the best mid-major has a non-conference game that could actually make a difference with the committee. Yep. But so it's interesting because of the way SP Plus handles this particular team. So you got Cincinnati 15, Notre Dame came in at 25, and
yep.
Now, I know Notre Dame's a deal where they're favored in most of their early games. They're favored in most of their late games. It's the middle for them that's kind of a bunch of tosses.
That middle is obnoxiously bad, yeah.
But the crazy thing, if you're Cincinnati, you need Notre Dame to be great every game except the one where you play them. You need to beat them, and then they have to win everything else. And then that's gravy.
Yeah. I mean, getting Indiana and Notre Dame back to back is awesome. And then, you know, I'm looking at their AAC schedule. It's not amazing. They do play UCF early on, but they finish with USF, ECU. So SMU still could be pretty good. They play them pretty late. But
opponent in the championship game if they reach it. Yeah.
Right. And so we're looking at this and like I'm trying not to just default to what we know always happens or always has in the past, where even a team that does score a great September win, when they start playing their own conference, we just forget all about them. The committee.
2016 Houston. If 2016 Houston had run the table in conference, I think they would have made the playoff because they beat the eventual Big 12 champ and they beat the second place ACC team with the Heisman winner.
I still don't have faith in the committee. I think they top out at like six. Like I still just don't, and it's pure theory, obviously, but I just don't have any faith in the committee to take them to, you know, even if you played Louisville and Oklahoma, well, you didn't play the rest of the Big 12 schedule. You didn't play the rest of the ACC schedule. And they always come up with a reason to discount it. And I just assume they would have been too.
And Houston would be like, great, put us against Clemson in the first round of the playoff and we'll solve that.
And it's so frustrating because we know that's where this is headed. Now, I don't think it's a guarantee that the G5 gets an auto bid. Like that'll be the most annoying thing in the world.
From a please don't sue us standpoint.
Well, that I appreciate, but I hope that's actually right. Cause that would be just the biggest kick in the butt. It's like, okay, fine. 18 playoff. They still don't get in. But no, I mean, we do this every year. We know where this is headed, but we have to now do, this is college football where we have to do a song and dance for the next 15 years until we get what we knew we were going to get all along. So that part's super annoying, especially when teams like Cincinnati, who had a top four case, there's not even a top eight to qualify for. It's just, it's very frustrating.
Well, I'll be fascinated to see what happens this year. So what is the reason Notre Dame is down as far as it is this particular year?
So, and again, I mean, I can speak from my numbers. I don't remember where FPI had them. I'm sure it's probably a decent amount higher.
I think they're a little higher. I'll check. Before.
Yeah. Right now they're 25th in SP Plus. The two reasons for that. Number one, Ian Book is gone. And obviously bringing in Jack Cohen from Wisconsin helps in that regard because I plugged his production in at Wisconsin into the overall numbers. So that helps a little.
And you've done that with transfers for all of these schools.
Right. Right. And this year, of course, I had to scale everything to where everybody played a 12 game season, because you can't, like, if a guy who played 12 games transfers to a team that played four and suddenly you have like 200% of last year's production back, that doesn't really work.
Well, that's why. And I noticed like you had Oregon pretty high originally back in February, and
originally
Tyler Shook was the returning. Now, if you watched Oregon at the end of the year, you're like, I don't know if Tyler Shook's going to be the starting quarterback next year, but he's definitely not now because he's transferring.
Right. Now, Oregon fans are like, well, that's just ridiculous. We're not going to drop off at all without him. Like, well, they still thought he was the best quarterback on the team for most of last season. Like, he's still, you're upside. But anyway, with Notre Dame, number one is that any team that does lose their starting quarterback outside of those top three that were so far ahead of everybody else, it's going to hurt you a little bit more. Biggest thing, though, Notre Dame was, I believe, fourth in SP Plus heading into the Clemson game. I believe they ended up 16th in SP Plus, because not only did they lose to Clemson and Alabama, they basically played in such a manner that the results that they got were the best case scenarios, especially against Alabama, where everything they did, it was like they were trying to lose by 17 points, and they did. And congratulations, they got the late touchdown and all that. But that, like, SP Plus, basically looking at the raw stats that game, right, they covered. SP Plus looking at the raw stats from that game saw like a 36 point Alabama win, and it was like 32 or 33, I think, for Clemson as well. And so it basically saw those games and thought, oh, well, Notre Dame's upside isn't nearly as high as I thought, dropped them to 16th. And then when you see 16th and you lose your starting quarterback, then suddenly the ranking in the 20s doesn't seem, it seems a little more logical in that way. So yeah, really with SP Plus, it came as much down to how badly they got pushed around by Clemson and Alabama as anything else.
Notre Dame, by the way, in FPI, ranked 11 with a projected win-loss record of 8.3-3-7. So,
and it, honestly, like 11-25, like if you asked me where, if I was an AP poll voter, I'd probably put them around 16-18. So that that kind of balances
this
out.
This is the other part that as a former AP poll voter, I tell people and they never believe me. Like, the difference between 12-35. A lot of times pretty negligible.
Yeah. And I mean, you can kind of see that just looking in the point totals with SP Plus as well, where like, yeah, Alabama's up here at 30.7 to start, and they're a couple ahead of everybody else. But then like number 10, North Carolina is at 21.7. Number 20, Utah's at 17.7. There's a 4-point difference between 10 and 19. There's a 4-point difference between 1 and 4, and then a 4-point difference between 10 and 19, number 19 and number 31. Yeah, it's a bell curve. And once you start to get outside of the top 5 or 10, those teams are not separated by much.
Yeah, but God forbid I rank your team 23 and somebody else's team would just have made it if I got down to 26. But now the people who like number 26 are really mad.
Well, exactly. And 26 is like 50 in these rankings too. Like if you're not that from a perception standpoint, I think we can't really get past that. If you're not 26, you're unranked. You are the commoners.
I just go full on SEC honk at that point. I'm like, why do you care if you ain't first, you're last? Quit asking me about number 23. Why do you aspire to be number 23?
That's right. And by the end of the year, 21 through 25 are just the teams with good records that we cram into the end of the rankings, whether we think they're any good or not. So,
there's no perfect way to do this. I think that is I always think that's a feature, not a bug, of college football.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I'm ready for, you know, I always say that, you know, even if we know who's going to end up in the national title game, there's still just silliness and chaos and lots of weird stuff happening just beneath the surface. I'm ready for another 2000 where all the chaos and silliness was above the surface again, like where we don't just have the same top three or four every single year. That'd be amazing. And I'm holding out at least a smidge of hope for that this year, just because everybody returns their starting quarterback, but Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State don't. Like, I'm still hoping that they're still gonna be awesome, but maybe they get upset once or twice, and that makes
the number of potential true freshmen starting quarterbacks at elite programs, or even just first time starting quarterbacks at elite programs. There's a lot this year, and I think that's gonna produce some variability. Thank God, because the sport needs it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been fun writing about FCS this spring, and just like the absolute silliness that happens every single week there, because the talent levels are so close and half the games are decided by like 7 or 8 points or less. That's been really, it's been a nice little energizer for me, because yeah, by the end of the year, you know, the teams that previously we could at least hope that like the teams like USC that looked inevitable, they still probably lose to Oregon State and make things really weird. Alabama doesn't lose to anybody. Clemson, Trevor Lawrence only lost to playoff teams. Like we haven't had that level of silliness hit the top level of the sport in a while.
We need it. Bring it back. I'm ready. I'm ready for your next SP Plus, because your first one, I think you had LSU down at 26. Those people are gonna are gonna go crazy. They're gonna yell at you. It's my favorite part when people get really mad at Bill because of what the computer spits out.
And we'll see. Like I haven't. I tried to get through all of the super seniors that were returning to P5 schools for those projections. I didn't get to all the G5s because it was just you couldn't find the information. But now that I've got those rosters updated, like a lot of G5s are returning, like 90%+ of production. There are going to be a lot of top 30, 40, 50, 60 level G5 teams that could absolutely kind of cause some silliness in September at the very least.
All right. You heard it here first. Silliness in September. Print the t-shirts. Let's do it. Bill Connolly, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.